Hey, and welcome to the IABC Ottawa podcast, The Voice,
the show where we talk about all things related to communications.
Ottawa is one of the International Association of Business Communicators' largest chapters in the world, and we are very pleased to bring you a podcast that covers everything from marketing,
strategy,
social media,
crisis comms,
public affairs,
to whatever else is relevant to communicators.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Sherry, and welcome to episode 120. Sarah, why don't you tell us what the topic is this week?
Well, there's been a ton of crises in the news as of late, whether it was the devastating bushfires in Australia, the ongoing international wreckage of the coronavirus, or the cultural feud we're seeing played out domestically with the nationwide rail blockades in support of the Wet'suwet'en First Nations chiefs in BC. And while these events have played out, we've seen different communication approaches to get the message out. So it got me thinking, what are the fundamentals of crisis communications? Is there an across-the-board approach? What has changed with the rise of social media? And what are some examples of groups that have made it out, you know, unscathed of a crisis? And on the opposite end, those who've gotten totally demolished by an unfortunate blunder?
Yeah, no, that is so timely right now, Sarah. There's been, it seems like, crisis after crisis after crisis in the news, definitely a relevant topic. So who did you get to talk to about this?
So we've got longtime strategic communications advisor Michelle Coates-Mather joining us on the pod from Ottawa. Michelle works at Syntax Strategic, a well-known PR/GR marketing firm here in the city. She's worked with private and public clients, from government officials to C-suite executives, and delivered, among other services, issues management along the way, which is kind of a fancy term for crisis comms.
All right. Well, I'm super excited to hear what she had to say about some of the events you mentioned. So let's play it.
So, Michelle, there's been a number of international crises in the news as of late. We were just talking about this off air. You know, we had the Aussie bushfires. We had the coronavirus outbreak. And now we've got Canada in sort of a cross-country rail blockade situation. And we see that police are now going in. And all around all of this, it's gotten me thinking about crisis communications and how to communicate during these difficult situations in the public and private sphere. And you work in this world, mm-hmm. this complicated world. Mm-hmm. and so I wanted to know from you, you know, when you've got a client facing directly impacted by a crisis, whether it's a natural disaster or, you know, some scandalous internal mm-hmm. feud, what is the first step you have to consider, or when you go into a conversation with the client, what is the first thing you ask?
Mm-hmm. What is the truth?
Mm.
That's the first question. And it's really important because truth can look different depending on the situation, mm-hmm. right? But you need to know what that is. And the truth could be, we don't know what right. this is. We don't know what the crisis is. You know, let's talk about a cybersecurity as an example.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, some of your clients' data has been breached, but you don't know why or how. You don't know the facts.
Mm.
You just know that. That's still something, right? Because you need to be able to acknowledge what has happened.
Right.
You don't ever want to get caught in a lie. You don't ever want to be in a position where you're denying something. Start with, what is the truth? And I think that a great example and recent one that comes to mind, of course, is what happened last year with Prime Minister Trudeau.
I was just going to say that.
And Jody Wilson-Raybould, yeah. right? Because he came out right out the door saying he denied. He denied the whole story.
Yeah.
But that put him in a really awkward position for days, weeks, months later, where he had to backtrack.
That was lesson 101 on crisis comms.
Lesson 101.
Mm-hmm. That was a perfect. So it is almost like, I was just thinking, you almost have to go into it as like a legal expert.
Mm-hmm.
What is the truth? And then we can build your case.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny you had mentioned legal, because sometimes there's this sort of competitive tension that happens between PR folks and legal, right? Because PR, it's all about, you know, managing and engaging that particular audience. And how do you do that in a meaningful and authentic way
right.
versus legal? You know, there's this layer of caution. You don't want to ever say anything that could come back to haunt you down the road, or admit guilt where there is no guilt. But I think there's a bridge that can be built between those two. Because in PR, we're not necessarily saying you should admit guilt every time. Don't admit guilt if you're not actually guilty of something.
Right, right.
But you should be able to acknowledge your role yeah. or what's happening in a factual way. And I think that's really the crux of it. Stick to the facts. Know what the truth is and stick to the facts.
Okay. So you wouldn't, but to that point on an apology, if there is guilt.
Yes.
Would you suggest, I mean, maybe it's not a fundamental across the board rule, but would you most of the time suggest you go in, you apologize right out front?
If there is guilt, if you are guilty, if you have done something wrong, you should apologize. Like that's the human, that's the most human thing you can do. And actually, I would argue too, especially in this day and age, you know, we're getting away from this phase where, you know, the canned talking points are just the accepted practice. Because the bottom line is, most Canadians, most people, they don't buy into that anymore. It means nothing to them. They can smell through all the talking points,
right?
They want authenticity. And yes, we say this word all the time. It's become a bit of a buzzword, but it's true.
Yeah.
People want something genuine.
Yeah.
And an apology, if it is real, if it is genuine, it can have a great deal of impact. It doesn't mean that it's going to solve the problem. It doesn't mean that you're going to manage to, you know, if you've lost a couple of clients because of this particular incident, it doesn't mean they're going to come back to you. But it does put you in a better position to at least get these people to accept that you are doing your best to make amends, right?
Yeah.
To take ownership and responsibility for what has transpired.
It's funny, you start to think back to like what we learned around in the schoolyard, right?
Yeah.
Like say sorry, you know, something. It literally is the fundamentals of human interaction, really.
It really is. But again, you have to mean it. It's like, you know, I have two young kids at home. Don't apologize to me unless you mean it, because it doesn't mean anything, right? So you've got to back that up with what? Action.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
So it can't just be as simple as, you know, I'm sorry that this has happened, or I'm sorry you feel this way.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we take responsibility for our actions, you know, and we apologize.
Yes.
This is what we're going to do now to rectify the situation.
And if we could point to another situation that happened in politics this year. It was the blackface, I'm sorry, but did that
kind of
really,
wishy-washy story.
Right.
Well, that was my first impression too. You know, when he came out onto that plane, it was sort of this, you know, it almost felt at the time, and look, people have different opinions on this depending on where you are on the spectrum, right, in terms of the political spectrum. But from my perspective, there was a lot of, I'm going to sort of place the blame on a bigger societal issue rather than just owning this was something that, you know, I had done as an individual, regardless of excuses. I apologize.
Yeah.
It wasn't right. Doesn't matter how old I was.
No.
How many times it happened. I shouldn't have done it. I regret it. Period. Full stop.
That's
Don't make
true.
Excuses. People can't stand excuses.
Yeah. For him, it was like, you know, I wasn't, it was a learning. I wasn't taught about those things.
Yeah.
Right. So it was a bigger,
And the truth is that doesn't fly in this day and age either, right?
No.
And I think on that thread, if I can just add to you, I think especially in the political realm, that was a huge opportunity for who? Jagmeet Singh. Because he came out in response
to
this completely off the cuff. He had no idea that this had transpired. But because he was in his reaction so genuine, no one had told him that had happened. That gave him a huge opportunity, right, to sort of set that nuanced difference between, you know, who Justin Trudeau is versus Jagmeet Singh in terms of that authenticity.
Yes.
Like you could feel the emotion and his just great disappointment.
Right.
Yeah. And that came naturally to him.
And that, again, natural authenticity. So are there some fundamental rules you can apply to each situation? So you enter into a client meeting. They've got this, whether it's internal or public facing. What are some of the fundamentals of crisis comms, if you will?
So the first one, again, being know the truth. So get the facts. Like that's really important. Rapid response is the next one, though, right? So the longer you take to get out a response, the worse it will be for you, especially in a digital age. But that's just the case regardless, because what happens then is people start to make assumptions or they assume where your stance is going to be. You want to be out there as quickly as you possibly can, even if it's a simple holding line just to say, look, this has happened.
Right.
We're looking into it and we're going to get back to you. I mean, sometimes that is the only response.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but do it quickly and then make sure you've got a follow up. So that's the third, I would say, fundamental part is make sure you're communicating at frequent intervals. Don't just, you know, come out, say what you have to say and then, you know, go dark. You need to constantly be communicating with people what's, you know, what has transpired.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing would be the fourth rule that I would apply is, there should always be a level of concern, right? Or compassion for any situation. Because if it's a crisis, somebody has been impacted.
Yeah.
There's always somebody impacted. So And that comes back to the human element of crisis. When you're really trying to bridge that gap or make a connection with your audience, they need to feel like you really care about them, even if you can't give them a solution right now and there on the spot.
Right.
We hear you.
Yes.
And we're doing what we can because it's what's best for you,
yeah,
our client, our customer, our shareholder, what have you.
Okay. So yeah, a bit of sympathy, empathy for the people affected. Mm-hmm. I think that rapid response is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming it's probably because other people are going to create the narrative for you no matter what. But I'm assuming, too, has it gotten even... you have to come out even quicker now because the Twitter's there and someone's going to tweet about it. And actually the blunder's going to come out in a video on Twitter first. So, you know, so is it quicker now that we have technology around us at all times?
Absolutely. I mean, that is the harsh reality of crisis. We call it a crisis for a reason, right? It's not going to make anybody feel comfortable. And look, the bottom line is it's crisis communications is not rocket science. It's almost a fine art of balance, really. Because that it is a tall task to come out with a quick response. And again, going back to that earlier point, knowing the truth and the facts, because sometimes we don't know what the facts are. It happens so quickly. Right.
Yeah.
So it's finding that balance of what can I communicate that is, again, factual and truthful in the moment as quickly as possible. But you're right. Like, it's not an hour anymore. It's often a matter of minutes.
And in that moment, like, I don't know if you've been in this circumstance. Are you compiling a war room of people that need to be in that room? What is that process?
Yeah. I mean, it looks different for, I guess, a lot of different companies and scenarios and situations. You know, in my experience, there are a lot of companies now, I think just knowing what we know about social media and how quickly, you know, a brand's reputation can just completely go down the drain, like at the drop of a tweet or the click of a tweeter, you know, that you need to be prepared. You need to anticipate more so than anything, right? So I think, so back to your question, one of the things that I think we're starting to see more of is companies or politicians or what have you, they're creating sort of a rapid response protocol.
Okay.
So you can anticipate, look, we can't always know what the crisis might be, what the subject might be, the topic might be, but you can anticipate that at some point you're going to be dealing with some kind of a crisis or an issue, right? What does that look like for you? Who needs to be in the room if something happens? Like, what is the trigger process? Who is your spokesperson? All of these sorts of details. It's really important now more than ever to plan that out in advance. And I would suggest, especially for communications teams, when you sit down to do your annual, you know, PR planning process, make sure you've got a page or two that just carves out what are you going to do in a crisis scenario?
Like, who is our go? Yeah.
Yeah. And even go a step further and even create some scenarios of what could possibly happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm thinking in an era too, I know everyone hates this term, but like the cancel culture.
Yeah.
Where, there's, you know, more scrutiny placed on high profile people for certain things they've said and for good reason, right? But you have to be, I always say, you know, that the process of getting into politics now, looking back at old Twitter posts, looking back at old, you know, photos on your Facebook page, like anticipating what could go wrong, which was, again, I'm a political person, so I'm sorry that I always make these references, but it was staggering to me that the conservatives hadn't vetted their, they have vetted their MPs,
their
candidates, but some of them kind of slipped through the cracks, I think. Right. And so again, just the anticipating, that's a good rule.
Yeah, no. And you're absolutely right. I mean, and I mean, that kind of stuff does happen. I mean, regardless of political stripes, that you're right. But the truth is we have to be far more vigilant now.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this is why we hear it's starting younger now, right? You know, teenagers are being coached on be careful what you post to social media.
Yeah.
Once it's out there, it can never go away. And that is the harsh reality of, you know, the life for which we are now currently living.
Yeah.
This stuff can come back and haunt you.
Yeah.
So if you don't want it to, if you don't want people talking about it on national news, don't post it.
So I'm curious about striking the right balance, because I've worked in different organizations where leaders have had to come forward and say, you know, show empathy, but also go about show concern for a situation, right? Have that strike that balance of this is an emergency, but also, hey, we can go forward, be the leader that they need to be. And I was thinking about the Australian Prime Minister who seemed to get a bit of this stuff wrong, right? With showing a little bit of tone deafness in his response, traveling while these bushfires were going on and then coming home and saying, we're going to get through it and blah, blah. So how do you coach someone, a leader, through that, okay, come out hot right now, show concern, but then immediately go into like, we're going to get through this.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like that concern, action, perspective approach, right? So you're showing concern right out of the gate. You're telling people what action you're going to take. And then, but let's just fact check all of this right now, put it into some bigger context. And I think that, you know, is critically important when you're trying to manage your own nerves and your communication approach. Mm. But frankly, honestly, communication's like anything else. It's a skill set. The more you work on it, the better you are at it, right?
Yes.
And comfort is a really important part of a crisis. Because again, a crisis situation, inevitably there's going to be angst. Mm. Even if you're a well-seasoned politician, it's hard not to have that sort of visceral, you know, innate reaction to that kind of stress. Because yeah. you're looking down the barrel of the gun and it is high stakes.
Yeah. And then like you see external things. I don't know. I was thinking of that Uber situation where there was like boycott Uber and then all their stocks plummet. So like things are actually happening.
They are and often completely out of control, out of your control. Right. And you see all these things happening that are sort of spinning out. What do you do? How do you maintain that? So I think one of the things that we're seeing, and proactively this is happening now, crisis comms is also filtering back up mostly to the C-suite. I think that's where we're seeing more and more of crisis comms being tackled. And there's a good reason for that, because big companies are often closely associated with whoever the CEO of the day is, right?
Right.
So it's really incumbent on those offices to make sure they're getting the proper training. Again, like a muscle, it needs to be trained. So the more you can force yourself to be put into these situations, the better.
Yeah.
And again, this comes back to anticipation. You always hope you never actually have to take that call or, you know, make that statement. Of course, nobody wants to be in that situation, but the reality is you likely will be.
Yeah.
So you're better off to practice, know your protocol. What does that look like?
Yes.
And force yourself in front of a camera, even if it's, you know, a camera and two of your staffers, so that you can see how you would react.
Mm.
Look back, watch your tone. It's so critically important to train yourself like you would, you know, in any other discipline.
It's true. Because there are some people that are just much more naturally gifted in that realm. I mean, even if you look at news anchors, like Peter Mansbridge was the man who calmed our nerves, right? And then there's some that are less so. But yeah, there's some people, it comes naturally.
And some just need a little bit of coaching and help. But it is absolutely a skill that can be learned and cultivated if it's put to use.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any new trends in crisis comms, brands doing things differently? Again, maybe this is like a little bit of the era we're in. Is it more about like poking fun of your blunders or being more authentic about mistakes? Is it like, we screwed up? You know, that's human. Is that kind of the trend? Is it more video? Are you seeing more people doing op-eds to say we screwed up? Mm-hmm. Or, what are those trends?
Yeah, so video, I think, is a really big trend that's happening right now. Again, because just like anything else, if we're talking about the human element, it's nice to have a face to the person that's saying the words or speaking the words in a crisis scenario, right? I think op-eds are fine. I mean, there's always going to be a space for that. But I think if you're really trying to engage an audience quickly, you know, getting on social and having that quick video from the CEO or whoever that spokesperson is often more effective and can create a deeper connection. So I think that's one thing. The other trend, of course, again, is our earlier point about rapid response. Mm. It's happening much faster now. But I think, you know, we've seen this idea of like, whoops, I've made this mistake and that's okay. But you've got to be careful not to be flippant either, right? Because it depends on what the issue is, what's happened. Like if we think about what happened with Tesla, remember when, you know, he threw the baseball against the window and it broke and it was, you know, that they, in my mind, actually turned that into.
Oh, it was brilliant.
It was actually in the end. It was like, you almost wonder, did he do this on purpose?
Yeah.
Because we're all chatting about it, right? And I think they actually handled that pretty beautifully because they didn't really come down hard on themselves. They just sort of, look, these things happen. And again, that goes back to our earlier, human.
We're human.
Mistakes do happen, right? So it's all about getting your audiences to that place of acceptance. Yeah. So those kinds of tactics of video, anything that humanizes a person, a brand, a corporation, is really what we're starting to see more of.
I'm curious what you think of what happened with Facebook and, you know, how Mark Zuckerberg handled the situation in the States with the misinformation and the retrieval of personal data and his appearances in the U.S. Senate. I mean, do you think that Facebook came out early enough to define their narrative, or was it a little bit of playing catch up and a little bit of denial?
Yeah. I think the latter. Personally, yeah. I think it was the latter. I suppose this is natural when you're sort of you run the world, because I think Facebook often thinks that they do. I think they took for granted the fact that people were very not just hurt, but, you know, feeling, frankly, icky about it. I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend I canceled my account. I don't have Facebook anymore.
Interesting.
Shortly after this happened, because I thought, look, I don't trust you right
now.
And I know I'm not the only one. There was a mass exodus from a lot of different people, and that says something, right? So this is a really good example, actually, of why tone matters.
Yes.
Tone and language are so important. And I think that whole scenario is a good example of the kind of tone and language you want to avoid.
Yeah.
Right? There was a lack of compassion, a lack of empathy, you know, sort of this sense that, well, look, this is just sort of the way it goes. I'm not really going to take ownership for it. And that doesn't land with most people, especially when you're talking about personal assets. Like, you know,
that's personal.
This
valuable,
is my personal information. Like, I'm sharing, you know, a photo of my baby
intimate.
With my grandmother or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
There's personal stuff going on.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. No, yeah. I at that point, I wondered, like, had they just never thought they'd get into this kind of situation. Right.
So, and again, it's not an uncommon mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked with a lot of clients that, again, typically the call comes after the crisis. Right. We need your help now. We're always encouraging clients that we work with, you know, on a retainer basis, think about this now.
Yeah.
Don't put yourself in that situation.
Yep.
It's stressful enough.
Yes.
Right? And no, it's not going to eliminate the stress, but at least you'll be in a better place to manage it.
To manage it.
Yeah.
Just last question here, and it kind of goes back to our Facebook point that you had canceled your account, and not that was a drastic decision. I'm just thinking that we are probably in an age where our loyalty to brands can churn like that.
On a dime, yeah.
Are you seeing that play out even in Canada and in situations, I don't know, here, that it's like, oh, nope, I'm done with you then?
Yeah, I think, again, so Facebook's a really great example. I do think that's happening. So again, I'm coming back to cancel culture. And I know we need to be careful of that as well. But I think, again, this comes back to this idea of who is genuine and who is not.
Yeah.
Who can I trust? Once you've broken trust with your customer, your client, your share, whoever that is, it is incredibly hard to build it back.
Mm.
But there is nothing more important, I think, to just humans in general than that feeling of I can trust this person, right?
Right.
If I think about social media influencers, I should say, are a really good example of this. You know, a couple, 2-3 years ago, social media influencers were making, you know, lots of money with these brand partnerships, you know, promoting different products and brands, and nobody thought anything of it, right?
I know.
But then gradually people started realizing you're getting paid to do this. So what do I believe here? Like, is this who you are? So now we see the hashtag ad
trend
now. So that's part, you now as a social media influencer, if you're being paid to do a particular, you know, promotion piece, you have to put hashtag ad.
Yeah.
But I think what that's done, because it's created an extra layer of transparency, that means your followers or your clients, your customers and so forth can make a judgment call. Like, I still respect this person enough that I don't care that they were paid to do this. I trust that they would only want to represent a brand that they respect or trust, kind of thing.
Right.
So I do think you can quickly lose trust in a brand or a persona or a CEO or what have you if they're not giving you a reason to continue to trust them or to continue to engage them, to continue to buy that product. It's so important to just maintain that level of honesty. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this, I feel like we could go all day, but we can't. thank you, Michelle, for coming in.
Thank you.
It was a real pleasure. Let's try and do this again. And
absolutely. I'd love that.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
So what'd you think?
That was fantastic. She was such a great guest, Sarah. There were a few things that stood out. Well, there were a lot of things that stood out for me. But I guess one was I had never thought about the tug of war that might occur between a PR department and a legal department.
Yes.
So in a crisis situation, you can have an agency or an organization that is fully on board with, you know, getting a statement out, being as transparent as possible. And then you can have opposite legal advice coming from your legal team.
Yeah.
And that could really slow things down, which affects the timing thing that she talked about.
Yeah.
That was so important.
I thought that was interesting, too. Like when the first question I asked was about, you know, what is that? What is the first thing you're trying to get to with clients? And she said, the truth. We always want to get to the truth. And I thought, oh, that kind of sounds legal, right? But so I think part of the role of a PR expert is to say, yeah, we are a bit of legal, but we are also, you know, many other things. So there's that probably that, like you say, a tug of war, you know, figuring out who owns what part of the issue. But there, I did kind of find it interesting, the need to know of what exactly happened. And if you don't know, let's be honest about that, too.
It's the facts, right? So no matter what your legal team is saying, you should not get in trouble stating the facts. Is kind of what it came down
yes.
to. Just what you know at that time, get it out right away. So
yeah.
that was one thing. And the other thing, it was just an example that came to mind when she was talking about the length of time. If you delay, like the risk of delaying.
Yes.
Because I think that is where so many organizations fall short is
yeah.
they know there's something on or there's a media article out there and they're trying to react to it and to get their response out there, but they're humming and hawing over how they're going to word this and it's going to approval at several different levels. But in that time that you're taking, people are making assumptions. So the example that came to mind for me was when there was an emergency alert that went out earlier
yes.
this year about the Pickering nuclear
yeah.
power plant.
Crazy.
Yeah, it went to everyone's phones. And it wasn't until an hour later that the Emergency Management Ontario corrected the information that was out. I think it was a tweet and alert both.
Yeah.
Just saying, no, okay, there is no emergency.
Right.
You don't have to evacuate. Everything's fine. So in that time, people were like packing. They were like, we might have to evacuate. And they just didn't know. And that's, I mean, that ended up being, I guess, a good story at the end of the day. No one was hurt. But it just goes to show what can happen. And in that middle ground time frame.
Yeah.
And I think, really, if there's a takeaway for companies that is so tricky today, especially because of digital, it's don't wait, like be transparent and get out there early.
I think that's, yeah, with the rise of Twitter and all these social media platforms, it's get out with something. And even if it's, we don't know, it's the situation is unfolding and we're working on it, right? Just to get your presence out there, showing we care. I also thought that was interesting too, her sort of balance between we care, but we're also, And this is a crisis, but we're also taking the situation seriously and we're going to get ahead of it and we've got it under control, right? Showing
mm-hmm.
that it's kind of a delicate balance. But yeah, getting out there as soon as possible and whether it's a Twitter or a press release, I think those are maybe a bit more passe now, but yeah, showing you're out there.
Yeah. And lastly, the only other thing I would say, because it could be a good topic for a future interview
yeah.
is we talked a lot about reputational crisis, like crisis communications, because you've thrown a tennis ball at a windshield and it broke the glass that was supposed to be unbreakable or whatever. But I think there is possibly more to know about crisis communications when the information you're communicating is like life and death situation.
Yeah.
Like, how do you deal with getting need to know information out if there's been a tornado, if there's been a wildfire, if there's the Newfoundland snowstorm that
whatever.
Would happen,
yes.
whatever it is. Handling that kind of crisis emergency, I do think you'd need slightly different tactics.
It's true.
Other than she did say, communicate constantly. Because
yes.
I think that's the other thing. An agency can sometimes put out a message and say, okay, we're good. Let's
and
not say
disappear.
Anything.
Yeah.
And then let's wait and let's,
right.
but keep putting it out. Keep every time you have a fact, I think, or an update,
we
just
need something.
Have a presence.
Yeah.
That I think would apply a lot in those life threatening situations.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. And we saw that the mistake in Australia that made. And I mean, similarly with the coronavirus stuff, that was just sort of a blank of information there, a whiteout period. And we're going, okay, so how many cases are there and where? And so, yeah, I think.
But that's a great example
yeah.
of an emergency situation where it's health related.
Yeah.
Like this isn't just reputation
no.
for whatever organization. The information you're communicating, people need to make decisions in their lives.
Yes, yes, totally. So, hey, I'm glad you liked it. And that's it for us this episode of the IABC Ottawa Podcast, The Voice, episode 120. We hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, if you have feedback, we'd love to hear it.
And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Our handle is @ IABC Ottawa. We're also on LinkedIn. And you can also check out our social and website. That is www.ottawa.iabc.com. And there's info there on all the upcoming IABC Ottawa networking, professional development events, member meetups, all of the things.
All of the things. And we also just wanted to give a quick congratulations to IABC Ottawa for winning 4 IABC Chapter Management Awards.
Yes, congratulations. So this news just came in. A few of the board members flew down to Austin, Texas last week for the 2020 Leadership Institute. And as we record this, we don't actually have the details on which awards they won, but we know they won 4. And if you stay posted to IABC's social and website, I'm sure that there will be more about this there in the coming days. So I think that's it, Sarah.
I think that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Let the music play.